They had spent the day like brother and sister, like uncle and niece. Then he had turned all serious, like a bodyguard, like she was his professional responsibility. They had had fun, and he cared about her physical safety, but nothing more. There never would be anything more, and there was nothing she could do about it. Nothing. She had asked guys out. All women her age had. It was permissible, accepted, even normal. But what could she say to him? What? What can a sister say to a brother or a niece to an uncle without causing outrage and shock and disgust? So it wasn't going to happen, and there was absolutely nothing she could do about it. She stretched out in her bed and brought her hands up above her head, laid her palms gently against the dividing wall and held them there. At least he was in her apartment, and at least she could dream. The guy got less than 3 hours in the sack. By the time he sailed the boat single-handed back to the slip and closed it down and got back across town to bed, he was up again at 6 and back on the street by 6:20 with a quick shower and no breakfast. The hand was wrapped in the plastic, parceled up in yesterday's post and carried in a Zabar's bag he had from the last time he bought ingredients and made his own dinner at home. He used the black Tahoe and made quick time past all the early morning delivery people. He parked underground and rode up to the 88th floor. Tony, the receptionist, was already at the brass and oak counter, but he could tell from the stillness that nobody else was in. He held up the Zabar's bag like a trophy. "I've got this for the hook," he said. "The hook's not here today," Tony said. "Great," the guy said sourly. "Stick it in the refrigerator," Tony said. There was a small office kitchen off the reception lobby. It was cramped and messy, like office kitchens are. Coffee rings on the counters, mugs with stains on the inside. The refrigerator was a miniature item under the counter. The guy shoved milk and a six-pack aside and folded the bag into what space was left. "Target for today is Mrs. Jacob," Tony said. He was now in the kitchen doorway. "We know where she lives. Lower Broadway, north of City Hall, 8 blocks from here. Neighbors say she always leaves at 7:20, walks to work." "And she's where exactly?" the guy said. "Wall Street and Broadway," Tony said. "I'll drive, you grab her." Chester Stone had driven home at the normal time and said nothing to Marilyn. There was nothing he could say. The speed of the collapse had left him bewildered. His whole world had turned inside out in a single 24-hour period. He just couldn't get a handle on it. He planned to ignore it until the morning and then go see Hobie and try to talk some sense. In his heart, he didn't believe he couldn't save himself. The corporation was 90 years old, for God's sake. 3 generations of Chester Stones. There was too much there for it all to disappear overnight. So he said nothing and got through the evening in a daze. Marilyn Stone said nothing to Chester either. Too early for him to know she had taken charge. The circumstances had to be right for that discussion. It was an ego thing. She just bustled about doing her normal evening things and then tried to sleep while he lay awake beside her, staring at the ceiling.
CD 5
Tripwire by Lee Child. When Jody placed her palms flat on the dividing wall, Reacher was in the shower. He had 3 distinct routines worked out for showering, and every morning he made a choice about which one to use. The first was a straight shower, nothing more. It took 11 minutes. The second was a shave and a shower, 22 minutes. The third was a special procedure rarely used. It involved showering once, then getting out and shaving, and then showering all over again. It took more than a half hour, but the advantage was moisturization. Some girl had explained the shave was better if the skin was already thoroughly moisturized. And she'd said it can't hurt any to shampoo twice. He was using the special procedure. Shower, shave, shower. It felt good. Jody's guest bathroom was big and tall, and the shower head was set high enough for him to stand upright under it, which was unusual. There were bottles of shampoo neatly lined up. He suspected they were brands she had tried and hadn't liked, relegated to the guest room, but he didn't care. He found one which claimed to be aimed at dry, sun-damaged hair. He figured that was exactly what he needed. He ladled it on and lathered up. Scrubbed his body all over with some kind of yellow soap and rinsed. Dripped all over the floor as he shaved at the sink. He did it carefully, right up from his collarbones, around the bottom of his nose, sideways, backward, forward. Then, back into the shower all over again. He spent 5 minutes on his teeth with the new toothbrush. The bristles were hard, and it felt like they were doing some good in there. Then he dried off and shook the creases out of his new clothes, put the pants on without the shirt, and wandered through to the kitchen for something to eat. Jody was in there. She was fresh from the shower, too. Her hair was dark with water and hanging straight down. She was wearing an oversized white T-shirt that finished an inch above her knees. The material was thin. Her legs were long and smooth. Her feet were bare. She was very slender, except where she shouldn't be. He caught his breath. "Morning, Reacher," she said. "Morning, Jody," he said back. She was looking at him. Her eyes were all over him. Something in her face. "That blister," she said, "looks worse." He squinted down. It was still red and angry, spreading slightly and puffy. "You put the ointment on?" she asked. He shook his head. "Forgot," he said. "Get it," she said. He went back to his bathroom and found it in the brown bag, brought it back to the kitchen. She took it from him and unscrewed the cap. "Here's the metal seal with the plastic spike," and squeezed a dot of the salve onto the pad of her index finger. She was concentrating on it, tongue between her teeth. She stepped in front of him and raised her hand, touched the blister gently, and rubbed with her fingertip. He stared rigidly over her head. She was a foot away from him, naked under her shirt, rubbing his bare chest with her fingertip. He wanted to take her in his arms. He wanted to lift her off her feet and crush her close, kiss her gently, starting with her neck. He wanted to turn her face up to his and kiss her mouth. She was rubbing small, gentle circles on his chest. He could smell her hair, damp and glossy. He could smell her skin. She was tracing her finger the length of the burn, a foot away from him, naked under her shirt. He gasped and clenched his hands. She stepped away. "Hurting?" she asked. "What? Was I hurting you?" He saw her fingertip shiny from the grease. "A little," he said. She nodded. "I'm sorry," she said, "but you needed it." He nodded back. "I guess," he said. Then the crisis was past. She screwed the cap back on the tube and he moved away, just to be moving. He pulled the refrigerator door and took a bottle of water, found a banana in a bowl on the counter. She put the tube of ointment on the table. "I'll go get dressed," she said. "We should get moving." "Okay," he said. "I'll be ready." She disappeared back into her bedroom and he drank the water and ate the fruit. Wandered back to his bedroom and shrugged the shirt on and tucked it in. Found his socks and shoes and jacket. Strolled through to the living room to wait. He pulled the blind all the way up and unlocked the window and pushed it up. Leaned right out and scanned the street, 4 floors below. Very different in the early daylight. The shiny neon wash was gone, and the sun was coming over the buildings opposite and bouncing around in the street. The lazy nighttime knots of people were gone too, replaced by purposeful striding workers heading north and south with paper cups of coffee and muffins clutched in napkins. Cabs were grinding down through the traffic and honking at the lights to make them change. There was a gentle breeze and he could smell the river. The building was on the west side of Lower Broadway. Traffic was one way, to the south, running left to right under the window. Jody's normal walk to work would give her a right turn out of her lobby, walking with the traffic. She would keep to the right-hand sidewalk to stay in the sun. She would cross Broadway at a light maybe 6 or 7 blocks down, walk the last couple of blocks on the left-hand sidewalk, and then make the left turn east down Wall Street to her office. So how would they aim to grab her up? Think like the enemy. Think like the two guys. Physical, unsubtle, favoring a direct approach, willing and dangerous, but not really schooled beyond the point of amateur enthusiasm. It was pretty clear what they would do. They would have a 4-door vehicle waiting in a side street, maybe 3 blocks south, parked in the right lane, facing east, ready to swoop out and hang the right on Broadway. They would be waiting together in the front seats, silent. They would be scanning left to right through the windshield, watching the crosswalk in front of them. They would expect to see her hurrying across or pausing and waiting for the signal. They would wait a beat and ease out and make the right turn, driving slow. They would fall in behind her, pull level, pull ahead. Then the guy in the passenger seat would be out, grabbing her, opening the rear door, forcing her inside, cramming himself in after her. One smooth, brutal movement. A crude tactic, but not difficult at all, more or less guaranteed to succeed depending on the target and the level of awareness. Reacher had done the same thing many times with targets bigger and stronger and more aware than Jody. Once he had done it with Leon himself at the wheel. He bent forward from the waist and put his whole upper body out through the window, craned his head around to the right, and gazed down the street. Looked hard at the corners, 2 and 3 and 4 blocks south. It would be one of those. "Ready?" Jody called to him. They rode down 90 floors together to the underground garage, walked through to the right zone and over to the bays leased along with Hobie's office suite.
"We should take the Suburban," the enforcer said. "Bigger."
"Okay," Tony said. He unlocked it and slid into the driver's seat. The enforcer hoisted himself into the passenger seat, glanced back at the empty load bed. Tony fired it up and eased out towards the ramp to the street.
"So how do we do this?" Tony asked.
The guy smiled confidently.
"Easy enough. She'll be walking south on Broadway. We'll wait around the corner until we see her, a couple of blocks south of her building. We see her pass by on the crosswalk, we pull around the corner, get alongside her, and that's that, right?"
"Wrong," Tony said. "We'll do it different."
The guy looked across at him.
"Why?"
Tony squealed the big car up and out into the sunlight.
"Because you're not very smart," he said. "If that's how you do it, there's got to be a better way, right? You screwed up in Garrison, you'll screw up here. She's probably got this Reacher guy with her. He beat you there, he'll beat you here. So whatever you figure is the best way to do it, that's the last thing we're going to do."
"So how are we going to do it?"
"I'll explain it to you real careful," Tony said. "I'll try to keep it real simple."
Reacher slid the window back down, clicked the lock, and rattled the blind down into position. She was standing just inside the doorway, hair still darkened by the shower, dressed in a simple, sleeveless linen dress, bare legs, plain shoes. The dress was the same color as her wet hair, but would end up darker as her hair dried. She was carrying a purse and a large leather briefcase, the size he'd seen commercial pilots using. It was clearly heavy. She put it down and ducked away to her garment bag, which was on the floor against the wall, where he had dumped it the previous night. She slid the envelope containing Leon's will out of the pocket and unclicked the lid of the briefcase and stowed it inside. "Want me to carry that?" he asked. She smiled and shook her head.
"Uniontown," she said. "Bodyguarding doesn't include dreage around here."
"It looks pretty heavy," he said. "I'm a big girl now," she replied, looking at him. He nodded, lifted the old iron bar out of its brackets, and left it upright. She leaned past him and turned the locks, the same perfume, subtle and feminine. Her shoulders in the dress were slim, almost thin. Small muscles in her left arm were bunching to balance the heavy case.
"What sort of law you got in there?" he asked.
"Financial," she said. He eased the door open, glanced out. The hallway was empty. The elevator indicator was showing somebody heading down to the street from three.
What sort of financial?
They stepped across and called the elevator.
Debt rescheduling, mostly, she said. I'm more of a negotiator than a lawyer, really. More like a counselor or a mediator, you know?
He didn't know. He had never been in debt. Not out of any innate virtue, but simply because he'd never had the opportunity. All the basics had been provided for him by the army. A roof over his head, food on his plate. He'd never gotten into the habit of wanting much more. But he'd known guys who'd run into trouble. They bought houses with mortgages and cars on time payment plans. Sometimes they got behind. The company clerk would sort it out. Talk to the bank, deduct the necessary provision straight from the guy's paycheck. But he guessed that was small time, compared to what she must deal with.
Millions of dollars?
He asked. The elevator arrived. The doors slid open.
At least, she said. Usually tens of millions, sometimes hundreds.
The elevator was empty. They stepped inside. Enjoy it? He asked. The elevator whined downward.
Sure,
she said.
A person needs a job. It's as good as she's going to get.
The elevator settled with a bump. You good at it? She nodded.
Yes,
she said simply.
Best there is on Wall Street, no doubt about that.
He smiled. She was Leon's daughter, that was for damn sure. The elevator doors slid open. An empty lobby, the street door sucking shut, a broad woman heading slowly down the steps to the sidewalk.
Car keys, he said.
She had them in her hand, a big bunch of keys on a brass ring.
Wait here, he said. I'll back it up to the stairs. 1 minute.